Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, that's pound 529, from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross here at Circus Sports, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. RGM Michael Lombardi back in the East Coast in New Jersey. A lot of fun having Matt Eumanns in studio here in the last hour. We're going to have Jonathan Von Tobel join us in hour number two as well, Michael. But I do want to begin this hour by simply asking you, sir, what is on your mind? I have a sneaking suspicion it has to do with last night's Monday Night Football game.
Oh, it can only be one thing on my mind. I mean, look, baseball, I'm disappointed the Yankees are down 3-0 to the Dodgers of all teams. But for me, it's Scott Novak. It's, you know, I took Pittsburgh in the Russo contest. I went into the game a weekend 1-1. I thought I would win this. I thought it was the right play. And this guy, he just loves to throw flags. He just loves to have people watch him referee. And I should have known better that when he's on Monday night, there's going to be even more flags come out. If this game would have been hidden in the 1 o'clock window on Sunday and nobody would have paid attention, probably maybe he would have let a few more things, but no, not at all. He's going to come out here. His flags are flying and he's going to influence the game. And of course, he's going to influence the game, and sometimes he's going to hold his flags. Like Matt Eumanns said in the last block, he doesn't call roughing the punter. The first series of the game, he doesn't call a pass interference call. The guy's grabbing on neighbors' arm, pulling him and tugging him. It should have been a touchdown. The only reason he didn't catch the ball is because he prevented him from running down the field. But, of course, why would we call that? You know, why would we call that? You know, we don't call the obvious. We call the non-obvious is what we do at Scott Novak's World. So, look, you live and learn. I'm the idiot for doing it. No one to blame but myself. I'll take full responsibility for being stupid.
26-18 is the final last night, so the Steelers do cover the number. The over does cash as well. Look, I'll be honest. I still thought you were on the right side of that game, and I know Matt Eumanns agrees as well. Sometimes those calls are not going to go the way that we saw them. But back to the punt return for a touchdown. How is there no flag on that play? Look, I'm not trying to get in Scott Novak's mind here, but it seemed pretty obvious that the punter, and I guess Peyton Manning and the Manning cast, even said they just took out the legs of the punter, and there was that was a game-changing non-call because it goes back 70-plus yards the other way for the only touchdown to date at that point of the game and gave the Steelers a 7-point lead. I mean, it was a huge non-call to determine the outcome.
Yeah, it was. I mean, but look, it's all weekend. I mean, how about the Tampa game? Yep. Atlanta? I mean, Kyle Pitts is clearly not in the end zone, and he gets stripped. And, of course, we do not have a sideline. We don't have an end zone cam. But even though we didn't have it, you could see the ball was stripped out before, and they don't change that call. So, look, for all this conversation about, you know, we got to do this, we're doing that. I mean, how about if we improve some of the officiating? You know, how about if we improve some of that? I think to me, you know, we just wonder, like, why do they miss certain things and you don't understand why they do it? The face mask penalties that they miss at times.
Oh, man.
You know, we saw that, you know, it's just happens in the Ram game. I mean, it's been all weekend. I mean, really, that's been a bad officiating weekend to me. And now that we all have YouTube TV and we can watch four games at one time, I think it comes to light bigger because we're able to see more games just sitting in our living room. We don't have to go to a sports bar to watch games. I know people had DirecTV, but not everybody had this convenience of watching four games at one time. I think YouTube has been sensational for the NFL, and I think it also highlights the problem we have with officiating.
I know that this is a conversation that's been going on for a long time. I remember over a decade ago, full-time officials. Does that solve it? Like, what's the solvable problem?
I don't see how. I mean, to me, I don't think it really does. Like, I think that's just a cliche.
Yeah,
people have this idea. Like, you know, it's like ridiculous. Let them have their own jobs, but like, look, make calls, you know, like be good. Like in that 49er game where the three guys throw flags, the back judge comes over and says, hey, here's the deal. Here's what happened. The guy got thrown in by the Dallas defender. So I just think to me, you know, they just have to do a better job. And look, if you're Scott Novak and you've called all these penalties, right? You've called all these penalties for so long. Don't you want to try to get to be into a game? I mean, the whole goal of these officials is to get to the Super Bowl or get to the divisional round. That's based on merit. It's not based on we're just going to pick you. It's your turn. So to me, you're graded. And like that last night's game, he's going to be graded horrendously. He missed calls. He made some ridiculous calls. I mean, his crew, you know, is not good. And it hasn't been good. And I don't know how he keeps being official. You know, he didn't make a playoff game last year, and he's right back again this year. It's the first thing I checked when they announced who was on the cruise. I thought for sure they fire him.
2-6 now, the Giants fall with that defeat, and the Steelers now still in first place in the AFC North at 6-2, plus $1.80 right now for the Steelers to hold on and win that division. The Ravens are still the odds-on favorites to do just that. Got to ask you about some trades as we get closer and closer to trade deadline. Maybe some smaller moves. I know to you, though, as an executive, they can be big moves. And we see the Patriots have dealt their outside linebacker, Josh Uche, to the Chiefs for a sixth-round pick in 2026. So Uche was a healthy scratch in the win over the Jets, and that maybe sometimes tells you, hey, maybe this guy's on the move, signed a one-year deal in the offseason to stay in New England. What does this mean for Kansas City, and does it signal anything for you from the Patriots side?
Well, the Patriots, it's interesting. The Patriots had a fifth-round pick from the Chiefs in next year's draft for Uche. They turned it down. And then the Chiefs gave that pick to acquire DeAndre Hopkins. So now they bring in Josh Uche, and they give up a six. So the Patriots were desperately trying to trade Uche, and they just kind of screwed it up. They waited too long to make the deal. But for me, this is a classic example of building on strength. I mean, Mike Danna, their right defensive end, is hurt, so they kind of needed another rusher to go along with Karlaftis and Chris Jones. They've been playing Chris Jones out at end. Now I think with Karlaftis and Uche, they can put Jones inside on those bad guards and get the matchup that they want and have him create havoc inside. I love when any team builds strength on strength. I think it's the best thing to do is when you're good in one area, most people say, well, we're good there. We don't need anything. No, add more there. Always go strength on strength. Iron sharpens iron. And I think that's the way to do it. And look, the Chiefs know exactly who they are. They've paid nothing for Hopkins. They paid nothing for Uche. They're not sexy moves. Hopkins isn't going to make them score 30 points. But what Hopkins is going to do is make them more efficient in the red zone. Right? He can catch the ball. He's always covered, but he's got great eye-hand coordination. He'll catch the ball in the red zone, and he'll convert third downs, even if he's covered, because he always catches the ball. So they get a third down guy. They get a red zone player that helps their offense just a little bit, improves a little bit. They're not going to be explosive. And then they bring in Uche, because they're always going to be playing from in front, and they'll be able to have somebody who can run and not run past the quarterback like Haason Reddick did for the Jets last weekend. They get somebody who can turn the corner and squeeze and play partnership with Karlaftis as they go and rush the ends. See, the two players on defense that have to work in harmony, and this is what Pittsburgh does so well, is the right end, which is Watt, and the left end, which is Highsmith, they have to coordinate their rushes. If Watt goes inside on the tackle, then Highsmith has to go high to squeeze the quarterback. If Watt goes around the corner and stays high, Highsmith has to come inside. You want to high-low the quarterback. What you don't want to do is what the Jets were doing against Jacoby Brissett, was have two guys run past the quarterback because he's yet to turn and run that way. So to me, I think Uche gives them a chance to have that partnership on the outside, and then it takes their best player, and they can match him up on the worst lineman inside.
You know, Michael, I'm looking at that adjusted win total of the Chiefs. Now they get Uche here to, as you mentioned, kind of get strength on strength, keep getting deeper. And Steve Spagnuolo, I mean, nobody really talks about Spags and the job he's done with that defense. It's ridiculous how good they are. 14.5 is the adjusted win total. I mean, I don't know that Andy Reid is motivated by 15-2s anymore. I mean, it's just about winning chips, it feels like, for Andy Reid. But did you even see a scenario where this would be possible? I mean, you got 15 back there. You always have a chance to win every game. We get that. But did you see this team being this good And as good as Spags is with this defense, is there any way that this is legitimately like a 15-2 football team?
Well, I think they basically, look, they decided that when they traded Tyreek Hill, they felt like, look, we're not going to keep outscoring people. We need to play better defensively, you know, and they have. And they've have, and they put their emphasis on defense. I mean, look, this trade to get Uche is an emphasis on their defense. But look, I don't care what their record is. They have vulnerability, right? Their quarterbacks turn the ball over way too much, and they need to correct that. But where they're good is they're good in situational football, right? They're the second best third down team in football. That speaks a lot. You know, they're really good at keeping the football away. They're not explosive. They're 23rd in red zone offense. They really, when they get down there, they miss Pacheco. They miss that run game. They know it. We all know it. And I think, to me, they know they're vulnerable. What I love about what Kansas City's doing is they're not resting on their laurels. They're not sitting there saying, oh, we got this. We're 7-0. They know they have some issues. They're 28th in the league in offensive turnovers. They're 29th in throwing interceptions. They really haven't been explosive. I mean, this year they can't run the football. They're 28th in yards per attempt. But what's really remarkable is Andy Reid is 6th in calling run plays. He's playing to the strength of his defense. He knows it. And that's, to me, a mark of a great coach. He's not trying to do what he does well. He's trying to do what makes his team well. I think that's huge. And he's designed the team perfectly because he's got limitations at the tackle position of both right and left tackle. He's got limitations in terms of speed at receiver. He's got an incredible quarterback, but he don't want to lose the game. And even though the guy has turned the ball over so much, they've been able to hang in there.
I'm looking at their Super Bowl odds now are down to 4-1. To do something that's never been done in the Super Bowl era, and that's go back to back to back and win 3 in a row. And that is a conversation, right, Michael? I mean, they got to be motivated by something. When you won back to back, there's got to be motivation to do something that's no team's done in the Super Bowl era, right?
Yeah, no question. And they've got players that really take great pride in their work. Mahomes, Kelsey. I mean, those guys have pride. They want to look good. There's a standard of excellence that they have to perform to that goes above and beyond winning.
I want to come back, talk about some of these Week 9 matchups and maybe a marquee matchup between Detroit and Green Bay and talk about the quarterback position there and what might happen for the Packers. That's next when you come back with us here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi going to have JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, in the next segment, Michael. But I did want to get back to what looks like it could be a marquee matchup here in week number 9 in the NFL. And certainly on paper it would be. Yeah. And that's Detroit at Green Bay. The problem here, Michael, is the quarterback situation for Green Bay. And that's Jordan Love. He's got a groin situation considered day-to-day. The team is saying he's got a shot. I don't know exactly what that means. To play in said game. I'm really impressed with Malik Willis that they traded for this guy right at the end of the preseason. And he's played really, really well. And Love's been really banged up this season. What do you make of this situation with Love? And would you, because you're getting something out of Malik, could you consider, let's just rest Jordan until he's truly healthy?
Well, I think it's going to be hard for Malik to beat Detroit. You know, you're going to have to throw the ball to beat Detroit. I think one thing about Malik is he clearly caught my man Gus Bradley at Indianapolis off guard when he played in that game, right? And he really came out and and this is not a knock at all on Willis, but you got to give credit to Matt LaFleur for really coming in and saying, okay, we're going to run this offense and, you know, we're going to basically be the single wing. I mean, they ran for 261 yards against the Colts at home. And then the next week against Tennessee, who knew he was starting and knew they ran for another 188. They run the single wing basically, and they use Willis's feet. And he did make some throws. There's no question. And then, you know, there's always think about this. He's only thrown 10 incomplete passes his whole time that he's played. He started two games, played. And then last week he comes in and, you know, they run the old Gary Kubiak under route off of a boot action, which has been Gary invented the play where usually he did it with a tight end that comes across the field and runs a wheel. And of course, Jacksonville had no idea what was going on. And the guy makes a 50 some yard play and they end up winning the game. But he's been really effective. But I think if you're Aaron Glenn, you really have to prepare your team for this. We spent a lot of time on the coach podcast yesterday talking about this situation because it's so important for the players to understand when there's a change at quarterback, what the new quarterback's capable of doing and where the offense is going to go and where it's going to lean towards. And I think to me, Jacksonville wasn't prepared for that. We saw Josh Jacobs run up and down the field on him. Well, who else was going to get the ball? Mm. And then we saw Malik Willis make a key throw, a safe throw, too. That was the key. It was a safe throw. It was no coverage to read. It was a play-action boot with an under route, and it was a it was an easy throw and catch. It's a high school play, and he did it really well. But with a week to prepare, you got to believe that Detroit can come up with something that can stop it.
You know, after Love went down in week two, you could have got solid plus money on the Packers to make the playoffs. You can't anymore. You got to lay $3 for this football team to make the playoffs. You think they're going to miss the playoffs, that's plus 230. If I'm picking up what you're putting down, maybe it's not sustainable for Malik to play at this level because other defenses got to be able to catch up to that. And maybe that starts with Detroit this week, right? So eventually, for this team to have the success they want to have, it's got to be Jordan Love, right? This is not interchangeable guys.
Well, I think to me it's a kind of a twofold issue, right? So, look, this defense gave up. Look, Jacksonville could have run the football more effectively on him if they would have just run it. But, of course, Dougie doesn't want to run it, so they only ran for 91 yards and still turned, Again, you got Trevor Lawrence, you turn the ball inside the 5-yard line because you're trying to throw passes constantly because you really don't know who your team. But they threw for 299 against them, right? They threw for 299 against them. And then you can move the ball on Green Bay. I think Halfley's done a really good job, but you can move the ball on them. What Halfley's done a great job is creating turnovers. And Detroit's very good at protecting the football. So I think, to me, that's going to be the game. Detroit can run the ball effectively. They've got to wear 7-inch spikes when you play up there. If you go up there and you don't have the right shoes on, you're going to end up like Houston throwing for 55 yards because you're slipping and sliding the whole damn time. And so you're going to have to handle that one, But I think that Detroit's played up there so many times. They've won up there. They know how to play there. They've done a good job there. I think, to me, Detroit's offense is a little stronger than the Green Bay defense, which favors them. That's why I think this line has gone from 3.5 to 4. I think the betting public sees this as the Lions are the better team no matter what field you put them on. And when you score 52 points, Dave, and don't have 100 yards passing.
How about that?
Wow, that's impressive.
By the way, Goff right now is the fourth betting choice for MVP at 8-1. He's played really well, but 85 yards.
I still
think
that's low.
Right?
I mean, why is nobody betting him? I mean, I know. Look,
it's the
what
stigma,
more does
right?
this guy have to do?
Yeah, it's a stigma, though, isn't
it? It's insane.
Yeah. I think it goes back
to
the LA days.
I mean, look, I've never been a huge Goff guy. I've always felt like pressure bothered him. I always felt he panicked in the pocket. I always felt like when you had to make him play fast, it was a problem. But to me, you can't deny what he's doing this year. And he's doing it subtly. He's doing it with 25 passes or less a game. He's pinpoint accurate. Look, Lamar's great too. Look, to me, it's a three-tier race. It's Jackson, Allen, and Goff. Mahomes doesn't belong in this conversation.
No.
When you're 28th in the league in turnovers, 29th in interceptions thrown, you do not belong in the conversation. I'm sorry. I think he's a great player.
Yeah.
But to me, this is just completely, it's the betting public just betting. It's like Bronny being bet for rookie of the year. Are you kidding me? Give the money to St. Jude's, please.
I mean, this is just it should say Patrick Mahomes / Steve Spagnuolo 6-1. I mean, the defense is playing so well.
It's ridiculous. I mean, there's some bets that are just stupid, But look, you have to understand the book's point of view here. The book's saying if he turns it on the last 8 weeks and he plays lights out and they score 50, we got to protect ourselves. I get that. I understand that method. I understand that part because he's capable of that. There's no question.
Before we move on with the NFL, Michael, I just want to bring to everybody's attention that we do have a really good deal right now for First Bet. It's Horse Racing's premier event. It's the Breeders' Cup. It's Friday, November 1st, Saturday the 2nd. When you do it with First Bet and use the promo code VEASAN200, you're going to get 20% rebate for your first 60 days up to $200. That's firstbet.com. Use the promo code VEASAN200. If you are a horse racing aficionado, that is the place to go. Who was not on the MVP board, Michael, was Anthony Richardson. Couldn't find his name anywhere. Now, Shane Steichen says for week 9 in their game against Minnesota, is he going to be the starter, Michael? Well, we're evaluating everything. That's what the head coach says.
That means he's not starting.
Really?
He can't. Shane Steichen, that means he's not starting. Shane Steichen cannot stand in front of his team and say this guy's the starter.
Woo.
I mean, first of all, Shane Steichen should apologize to his team for calling a stupid pass play at the end. How many more times is Steichen going to do this where somebody doesn't call him out on it? Like, it's ridiculous. He does it all the time. He did it against Cleveland, twice against Cleveland last year. He does it all the time. He mismanages the second half. It's got to be one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my life. I mean, look, here they are. They've done nothing with the football. The quarterback was unbelievably paid poor, but there's no way you could sit there and want to put him back in the game. But then you let him throw the ball at the end of the first half. I mean, are you kidding me? And he throws a pick. Like, it's just stupid. It's just so dumb. I mean, the play of the game, the Colts were 90 yards from the goal line. The quarterback at that point was 2-for-14 in the game. He was 0-for-6 on third down. And, you know, and he had thrown what should have been a pick six on the previous second down. And they should have gone into halftime 10-10. Instead, they went into halftime down 17-10. That's on the coach. That's on the coach. Like, he would have never survived an Al Davis intervention right there. But to me, when he say they're considering it, Joe Flacco is going to be the starter. He has to be. You can't put this guy out there and tell your team you're doing good. Plus, I mean, how many guys have you ever seen walk off the field because they're tired? Tired?
That's what I wanted to ask you about. Is this more about performance or is it more about tapping the helmet and saying, I've been running around here, Michael,
it's
too much.
Performance.
I need a break.
It's you can't run enough. You can't, I mean, I don't know how he calls a game. He's 10-for-32, 2-for-13 on third down. And gave up what was essentially a pick six. I mean, look, I know the guy's the fourth pick overall in the draft, but there's been no ever indication that he's gotten better. Like, at some point, call it like you see it. The guy's a disaster. Can he make an incredible play? There's no doubt. Is he an incredible athlete? Look, the play he was exhausted on, he should have been sacked, but he's so hard to tackle. But I believe this, he hasn't improved. He played great against Utah in college. The next week, he was bad. This has been the story of his career. He teases you. He's a tease.
Oh, by the way, again, kid's tired. I understand that. I've never seen that. But have you seen that before? Where a quarterback says,
No, of course not.
That doesn't happen.
Of course not. What would happen is the guy goes back to the huddle. The coach sees he's breathing heavy. He might call timeout.
Call a run
play. We might have him hand the ball off.
Yeah.
And run the ball, right?
I mean,
Flacco came in and handed the ball off on the next play. Like, you couldn't stay out there and hand the ball off?
Such an odd look. By the way, and maybe that's why this number's going down, Michael. They know what you know. And that this, you know, if Flacco plays, if you gave Brian Flores truth serum, he'd rather play Anthony Richardson, right? This is not debatable. He'd much rather play Richardson than play, you would assume, Joe Flacco. That's what I believe that the Vikings would believe.
Oh, they definitely. Brian Flores is rooting for Richardson all the way.
When we come back, Jonathan Von Tobel joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue to roll on here on the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you on a Tuesday. And Michael, the NBA is also in full swing as well. So always great to bring in our guy, Jonathan Von Tobel. Of course, does a great job on the network here. The host of VSiN Primetime. You can follow him as I do on X at MeJVT. Joins us here in the Progressive Guest Line. And Jonathan, I'll be honest, I have not been watching the NBA like a hawk. I know you have to begin the season here. I keep being told that, like, say, with the Lakers, they're getting great coaching so far this year with J.J. Redick. Any short-term takeaways you've seen in the first week of the season?
I think it's that they're playing through Anthony Davis, right? Like, that's kind of the big part. Going into last night, AD was averaging 35-12 on 50% shooting, 57% shooting, I want to be specific there. He's been absolutely tremendous. So I think for me, Dave, it's that. Like, they look like a competently coached bunch. They are using their guys the way that they should. AD is now the focal point of this offense. He is dominating opponents left and right. You can see him getting more comfortable. LeBron, in terms of shots in the first couple of games, seemed to be taking a little bit of a backseat. But again, yesterday, 29 and 15 from AD, despite the fact that they lost their first game. I really like this team a lot. Like, I'm a Clippers guy. I'm a hater, right? Like, I don't want this to happen. I even told Matt Eumanns this off the air yesterday. I was like, man, the worst thing that's going to happen is that this Lakers team is actually going to be good and it's going to suck. But I do think that J.J. Redick has proven that he looks like he's a pretty good coach, because he is getting more out of a team that, remember, didn't really do anything in the offseason. Christian Koloko was one of the offseason acquisitions, but you were really banking that guys like Gabe Vincent were going to give you more. Max Christie was going to take a step up, and we're starting to see a little bit of it. Now, I will say this. Yesterday, I think you saw a small issue, which was that you only got 8 points out of your bench. So is that going to be something that kind of plagues you as you move forward? But I do think they have a trust in the starting five that is very, very solid.
Are you buying into the Cavs? They haven't lost a game all year. They're undefeated. Them and the Celtics are the only two teams that haven't lost a game. But with the coaching change, I think Atkinson's a really good coach. Are you buying into them?
Yeah, 100%. I was on them yesterday, Michael. Wrote about it in the column. Took three with them out there in New York. And, you know, they fell back a little bit in the third quarter, but ultimately came storming back. But I really like Kenny Atkinson. You know, if you remember back when he was with Brooklyn and he had a really solid, magical year, then he ends up going and play assistant coach for a while. I thought it was a long time coming that he was going to get another crack at this. And sure enough, he's not only getting this team to play with a little bit more pace, right? Their pace is up from last season, which is a pretty good amount. But I think when you look at their ability to shoot and their now willingness to shoot, for example, Evan Mobley yesterday, he hits 1 3-pointer, but he's shooting more now. And he was shooting 42% going into that game yesterday. So now all of a sudden the spacing is going to be a lot better. It opens it up. And if Mobley can all of a sudden become a threat offensively, at least when it comes to shooting, all of a sudden your offense is more wide open and you don't give up anything defensively, because one of the big weaknesses for Cleveland was, were you going to be able to play Mobley and Allen together? And the key to that was going to be Mobley's willingness to shoot that basketball when he got an opportunity. They're also a little bit deeper than I think they're giving credit for. And remember, they're still banged up. Max Strus is not available at the beginning of this year. So you saw it a little bit yesterday, but you do have a couple of guys coming off the bench. You have George Niang. You have Caris LeVert. Isaac Okoro is not a great shooter and spacer, but if you need a guy to play defense on a Jalen Brunson, for example, he can come in and give you 10 minutes or something. So I don't know, Michael, if from a like championship perspective, they're going to be able to compete with team like the Boston Celtics, but I think they have like dominant regular season team written all over them. And I wouldn't be surprised if they actually sat up there at number two, maybe even depending on how the season goes for Boston, competes for the number one seed. Cause I do think they're going to be a very good regular season team.
Very quickly here, the only other undefeated teams besides Cleveland are the reigning defendings with the C's at 4-0 and then OKC out West. And I know you love this OKC team out West. Are they going to be the best wire to wire here, the young Oklahoma City Thunder? Cause they look like, I don't know where the weaknesses are.
I'd be stunned if they weren't, Dave. Like, if out there in the West, I would be stunned if it was not OKC from tip to tail, as they would say. They like you said, they look complete. They look balanced. And remember, Hartenstein is still hurt. So he's going to come back at some point, and he's going to give you that complimentary center coming off the bench, and you could play some of those big lineups if you want with Chet Holmgren. They've got four, count them four, legitimate all-defensive players on that team as well, in Caruso, in Lu Dort, in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, in Chet Holmgren. They are a balanced and deadly team, and I'd be shocked if they didn't go wire-to-wire in the Western Conference.
Let's shift into college football, JVT, and certainly, you know, this game we have to – a lot of good games this weekend coming up in terms of college football, but like always, you tend to focus on the kind of off the beaten track. You love that what's that conference, that the Mountain West. I'm sorry, that was the old Mountain West. I mean, Boise State, big win against UNLV last week. San Diego State struggled in their game, but who do you like in this one? San Diego State going up to Boise.
Yeah, so I think this is worth it in grabbing the points here with the Aztecs, Michael. We're seeing the market kind of head in that direction, right? We came off of this 24, some 23, 23 and a half start to appear. South Point, some other spots still have 24 up. But I think situationally, you would circle this as a small letdown spot. Look, that was a tough game for Boise State. It was a very good one. I was out there on Friday night. It was a very good environment. And I think one of the things you kind of learned was UNLV, They put everybody in the box and they said, we're going after you. And Ashton Jeanty, on the surface, you can look and say 120 yards or 130 yards and a touchdown. He only averaged 3.9, 3.8 yards per carry. UNLV made him work every single step of the way, kind of putting out there that if you just solely focus on this and make guys like Maddox Madsen beat you, you could put this team into a little bit of a tight spot, that team being Boise State. And you mentioned, I mean, San Diego State, the last time we saw them, looked a tiny bit more competent when in that game against Washington State. But this is about the situation and the fact that I do think that San Diego State ended up losing 29-26 to Washington State. Cougars needed 15 points that fourth quarter to win that game. That I think the Aztecs can make this a little bit more of a slugfest than the 24-point spread would indicate. So I think the Aztecs are going to be pretty live at a letdown spot for the Broncos this week.
We are burying the lead here, boys. We've got Old Dominion football, the 757, going to App State. Jonathan, we didn't have football down in Virginia Beach when I was a kid. Now Old Dominion, not only are they playing D1 ball, they're playing some big boy football. Are they live against App State this weekend?
So I wanted to point this out for your audience because I think that this is a really important game. And I wrote about this in the column. You know, we write about the line moves every single Sunday from the openers. You know, we are at the point of the season, guys, where numbers are pretty tight, right? Like, we're not really moving a ton on the openers unless there's like a, you know, an injury. Totals will still be pretty crazy. But sides, relatively, like, if you talk to odds makers, you talk to handicappers, you talk to modelers, a lot of their numbers are going to fit kind of in the same bell curve for the most part. So I was shocked when you saw this thing open up. Appalachian State opened as a 3-point favorite in that game. Old Dominion is now a 2.5-point favorite, and there's no injury concerns. We were talking about this with Dan Staley yesterday. This is pure, no, we think this is wrong. ODU, or as I like to call them, Old Dirty U, has been great against conference opponents. They are 3-1 against the spread. They have covered against Sun Belt opponents by 13.9 points per game. App State has been the inverse of that. They are 1-2-1 against the spread. They failed to cover by about 13 points per game. These are two trains passing in the night in conference play, and it seemed like the odds makers just threw up three, and those who shaped the market completely and vehemently disagreed to the point where we got to flip from a field goal favorite to now a near field goal favorite on the other side. That's rare when that happens without a key major injury or something like that. So I thought it was very much worth pointing out that these things still happen at this point of the year. For the audience who was looking to get involved, just know this thing has swung in a major direction over the last 24 hours, 48 hours since thing is open.
I want to go to the NFL real quickly. I only have about 3 minutes left, JVT. Who do you think starts a quarterback for your Colts?
Ooh.
And why is the line coming towards them? Is that because Flacco is going to start?
So I actually still think it's going to be Anthony Richardson. I think if you saw Shane Steichen's comments yesterday, if you watched the actual clip, Michael, it was very like that clip was taken a little out of context of that quote, because he was a little bit more like, no, like we're evaluating everything. We're evaluating running back. We're evaluating ourselves. And by the way, I would love to see your thoughts on this. I think he should evaluate himself. Anthony Richardson only had three designed runs in that game yesterday, right? Like you're not using him for what he is there for.
Well, how about his play call at the end of the half where he gives up an interception? Like, why 100%? Not just go in at halftime 10-10? Like this, how many times has he done this in his head coaching career that no one talks about at all? It's malpractice and he never learns from it.
Yep. Like I think Steichen's good, but he has his flaws. And I think he's got to evaluate himself. And I would say to the line move here, Michael, like maybe the thought is that the market thinks that Joe Flacco is going to start because of that. But we also have to realize, and I pointed this out to Matt Eumanns yesterday, the Colts are one of the best, if not the best, cover teams in the NFL. They're 7-1 against the spread so far this year. So the market has been undervaluing what has been a very competent team. Yes, the quarterback position has been below average, but the rest of this team has at least done enough. The market thinks that they're pretty below average, but they're at least an average squad. And that has been enough that they have been covering 7 of the 8 games that they have played up to this point. They're 4-4 straight up, but have covered 7 of those. And I think you're also starting to see the market buy into that. Regardless who plays quarterback, their market rating does need to be adjusted because it is a little bit too low.
You know, JVT, you and I will forever be linked because we watched it together. The shocking ending in DC for the Bears last week. One, are you over it? Because I still can't believe that it actually happened. And two, how do you reevaluate what we saw with the Commanders and Bears after that, the way that game ended?
No, I'm not, because I could have had a 4-1 contest week. Dave had the 49ers later in the day and they ended up winning and covering. So it would have been nice to have 4-1 in that contest. But no, I think you evaluated in that. Like I said this to Mitch and Paul, we were talking about this yesterday on our primetime pregame crosstalk. I don't think the Bears deserve to be in that situation anyway, right? They got completely outplayed. Washington allowed them to stay in it, missed kick, settling for field goals. And I think Matt Eberflus, you talk about some self-reflection. Brother, you don't hand it off to a lineman, and the play before mattered. They only got to the end zone on the Hail Mary because of the play before. So you talk about some self-reflection. preseason coach of the year favorite, Matt Eberflus, needs to do it.
And as Michael said yesterday, too, take a time out. You had three of them, and take a Kodak picture of the deal. Yeah. We could have reassessed the whole thing. Great having you on, JVT. We'll catch up again next week, my friend.
Thanks, JVT.
Good to talk to you guys. Congrats on the new show.
Thank you very much. Jonathan Von Tobel.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on the Lombardi Line, Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi coming at you here. And Michael, we are, I guess, technically now with 17 weeks in the NFL season. Can we classify that? Is this the new halfway point of the season? It's hard to get to a halfway point with a 17-week regular season.
Well, I think to me, somebody sent something to me over on my computer and I got caught off guard there. Go ahead again, David. No, I'm sorry.
All good. I'm curious as an executive, is this now truly the halfway point where we're kind of reevaluating?
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, some teams have had their bye, some haven't. But this is the reevaluation before the trade deadline, right?
Yeah, no question. And I think to me, this is really now Halloween is, you know, we got to maintain our physicality. We have to understand what it's going to take to win, to get to the Super Bowl. And you've got to plot accordingly. Look, the Chiefs have the best record. They're not necessarily the best team. If you're in Kansas City, you're asking yourself, how do we beat Baltimore? How do we play Baltimore? How do we match up to Baltimore? What can we do? That's why they trade for Josh Uche. They know that you need fast guys on defense who can chase Lamar Jackson. So that's the motivation for that. That's what made watching Hard Knocks this summer or this spring so ridiculous. They never mentioned what does this player do against certain teams. Brian Burns, you didn't even hear his name mentioned last night. You know, and he's supposed to be their best rusher. So I think to me, that's how you have to build your team. And at week eight mark, if you're one of those teams in contention, you're saying, what do we need to do to beat the better teams? Beating the teams on the schedule aren't necessarily what happens. You've got to beat the teams that you're going to face. Who could you run into? You know, if you're Detroit, you know, we're going to need to get somebody who can rush. We're going to need another rusher. That's clear. Green Bay, you know, look, Baltimore, we need more coverage people. We need somebody there. So I think to me, that's really what has to happen. And that's what the week eight is before you get to the trade deadline. And the only team that's been active, which is shocking, right, is Kansas City. They're undefeated and they're adding players because Andy Reid knows his team and he knows what he needs.
Absolutely fascinating. That I love that analysis of like the move inside the move. Why do you go get it, Uche? It's for Lamar Jackson. They're thinking that far down the road here, potentially in an AFC title rematch. Let's get to some of our best bets here, Michael. They are brought to you by GBank, the official bank of VEASAN. It was great having JVT and Matt Eumanns on the program today. And we were discussing with Matt in earnest about the Jets. This is a team that I think a lot of people thought might be in this conversation that we're having potentially for a Super Bowl. Feels like that is, 10 years ago now. Like this season has just been derailed. They are favored by 2 Thursday night now over Houston. And Houston's coming in here with a lot of injuries, certainly at receiver with Collins, and Diggs going to be out for this game on Thursday night. And now the Jets are weighing 2 points in their direction. Matt likes the Jets, and he's leaning towards them, saying this is the last hurrah for Aaron Rodgers. We'll figure out what Albrick is here as the interim head coach. How do you look at the Jets? Is this season – can they resurrect this season here at the halfway point?
Well, the Jets aren't healthy either now. Look, the Jets aren't 100% healthy. And I think to me, defensively, you know, they have not gotten better. They played the Patriots in week 2 of the season on Thursday night, and they held the Patriots to 111 yards. And last week, they couldn't stop the Patriots when the 2-minute drill came into play. So I'm a little bit nervous. I think the Jets have shown us who they are. We just have to believe them. Aaron Rodgers can't really move around, and he's going to face 2 ends that can really run. Mm. He's going to face 2 defensive ends in this game against his poor tackles, right? He's going to face Will Anderson, and he's going to face Danielle Hunter. And so those 2 guys can track you down, and Rodgers can't move like he once did. And I think Stingley can easily handle Garrett Wilson if they match him up on one-on-one. And then who else is getting open for the Jets? Don't tell me Devontae Adams is the number one receiver. You're not watching tape if you tell me that. You're watching Green Bay Packer tape from 2017. That's what you're watching because he's not the same guy. Is he a good player? Sure, he's a good player. but he's not going to take the top off. Nobody's worried about it. Nobody's driving to the stadium saying, how are we going to cover Devontae? They're just going to say, we got to play him. We got to be physical with him. We got to match up. We got to jam him. You know, we can't get beat on double moves. We can't get beat on the – that's kind of how you have to play it. We have such a perception problem in this NFL where once a guy's labeled a good player, no matter how older he gets, he's still a great player. That's what's happening with the Jets. I think Matt's got a lot of guts to do it. I wouldn't do it. I watched the Jets closely yesterday on tape on the All-22. They're not a good team. They're just not a good team. Their pad level's too high. They may play emotionally. They may play better. But they really have no identity on offense. They don't know really how to run the football the way they need to run the ball. And everything is kind of like a play here and a play there. And look, Houston, I thought Stroud was really good at the end of the game. And Houston's good in the kicking game. The Jets aren't. I mean, they haven't cut Zuerlein yet. You really want to bet in a no-point game, Zuerlein as your kicker? Do you really want to do that?
I don't want to do that. That's for sure. Another play that I'm very intrigued by that Matt's going to play the Browns, getting 2 points at home against the Fighting Harbaughs here in Cleveland. We'll see about that West Coast to East Coast thing here. And we kind of talked about it, and I know you and I see it the same way here. Harbaugh's going to take points. If he's got field goal opportunities with, you know, Dicker the kicker, he's not going to shoo those. It's now down to 1.5. So, you know, Matt's going to get the better of the number here because there is some Cleveland money coming in. Is this just about Jameis and that this team has life? I know there's a 2-win football team in Cleveland, but do you see them having new life now that Deshaun Watson can't play quarterback anymore?
Yeah, they have hope. Hope is a powerful motivating tool in the NFL. You have hope, right? Winston averages 7.9 yards per attempt on passes. I mean, Watson was averaging 5.3. You don't think there's hope in that number? Winston's thrown for 4 touchdown passes in only 53 attempts. Watson had 216 attempts. He threw 5. I mean, it's not even close. It's a lie that we've been told by the Browns organization that he wasn't the problem when he was the problem. Alex Van Pelt is sitting up there in New England. He had to move his family. He got fired because he was supposedly the problem when it was Watson. It was Watson. And so, yeah, I'm all in on this one. I think the Browns defensively have new life. Are they going to be a problem? Look, we know the Chargers struggle to score points against good defenses because they're so one-dimensional. They really don't have a receiver that can beat you. They got to play it close. It's going to be a close game. It's going to be a tight game. And I think ultimately, now, you know, are they, you know, ultimately it's going to come down to Winston's got to protect the football. He hasn't thrown an interception. He tried to throw one to Kyle Hamilton. He just didn't catch it. But, you know, that's the game right there is what quarterback can manage it. And I think, to me, the other thing we have to look at is the weather factor in the game, right? I think, to me, we now have to start – I know both of us are not weatherman, but we have to start looking at the weather in these games because it's going to be a factor.
Yeah.
It you know, wind, rain, sleet, snow. We're in the gales of November. And Lake Erie, as all the Great Lakes do, get a little bit rough this time of year and affects the weather.
I know Harbaugh does not want to be affected by the weather. It's just like, you know, they're playing in L.A., but he's really one of those old school guys. He'd like to be able to run the football with J.K. Dobbins and not have the weather be a problem. But I don't know that their football team's good enough to play the way he wants to play yet. Right. But he's kind of molding it that way eventually. Yeah. Right, Michael?
He's trying to play his way and he's determined to do it. And even if it caught, I mean, like, look, they go in Arizona and they couldn't score on Arizona's defense, right?
Right.
I mean, they had chances to win that game. They didn't cover that one. You know, that was they lost that game. I think, to me, this is another road game, but this is a better defense than Arizona. This is a much better defense than Arizona, and they're tougher to play at home. And look, there's a lot of, you know, you beat Baltimore at home in a game that, you know, Baltimore didn't really give you the game. They had some drops. There was some problems there, but you got a new sense of life. You're 2-6. To me, I like the Browns' chances better than I like the Bengals because the Browns can play defense. They can control the game. Look, they should have beat Cincinnati 2 weeks ago if they had benched Winston, if they had benched Watson in the first quarter. They would have won that game.
One other game that Matt has in pocket here is that big one in college football. We talked about it with Carl Johnson yesterday in the program as well. Penn State against Ohio State, and Penn State's getting 3.5 at Happy Valley. They don't have a lot of success. We haven't seen it here against Ohio State in recent years, but it does feel – does it feel different to you this year, Michael? Like, we can understand why Matt's going to play –
I don't think Ohio State – I watched that Nebraska game, Dave. I wasn't impressed with Ohio State at all. I thought, to me, Nebraska had chances in the game, And I just think their quarterback's a freshman. I think he's been somewhat overhyped. He couldn't make a play when they needed to. He got hurt his shoulder on a blitz. He got rough in the passer on his shoulder. But, I mean, I think I lean towards taking Penn State here. I don't see it with Ohio State. I mean, I think there's so much pressure on Ryan Day. He's already lost one. I think there's a lot of pressure on him. I mean, look, but Drew Aller's injury worries you a little bit. It has to.
The G-Bank Visa Signature Card is your best bet, delivering 1% cashback rewards on eligible gaming transactions, 2% cashback rewards on all other eligible purchases. So for more information, head to VSiN.com/G-Bank. That's VSIN.com/G-Bank, subject to credit approval and terms and conditions do apply. Michael, really enjoyed the conversation as always, my friend.
Yep.
Cannot wait to do it again tomorrow. And again, we want to point out.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. We want to point out, of course, you don't have to go anywhere because we got Matt Brown, Kelly Bidwin. They're going to hop in here right after we are done here on the Lombardi Line. They've got you ready next on A Numbers Game. We'll see you tomorrow right here on the Lombardi Line.